Hey everyone, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. How the heck do you hold your people accountable? If you've been feeling like your team is just getting away with murder sometimes and you don't really want to address it because recruiting is even bigger of a struggle, so you just kind of let it slide, you're going to want to listen to today's conversation with Jen Long, the author of Own Up, How to Hold Your People Accountable Without All the Drama. We're going to break down the 6 steps to getting someone to own their actual responsibilities through one simple conversation. Spoiler alert, this is not about ruling with an iron fist. And it's also not about capitulating and just giving in to all your people's needs. It's about having critical conversations that lead to people actually owning their role and responsibilities within the organization. Jen was also awesome enough to give us some free frameworks and templates so we can use this after the talk. So make sure you download those. They're down in the description. But without further ado, let's get started with Jen Long. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Jen, thanks for coming on the show. Stoked to chat with you. Welcome. Welcome to our Contractor Evolution podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to talk.
All right. So you are the accountability systems lady. You have all things accountability in your world. You've written a book on this, Own Up. You've got a massive background in this. And I would love to get into what this means. Like, what do you do every day? How did you get to even do this? This is a very niche thing. So I'm very interested.
It is a very niche thing. And I think it started because most of us learn how to do accountability based on how we grow up. Right? We get those skills from our parents and our families, and it starts there. But when you enter the workforce and you start getting paid to do something, that's when it really starts to matter. And so I think in my own frustration in the work environment of being like, what the heck is with these people who don't show up and don't deliver? It sort of has turned from an ability to manage people to really get into a niche around how you have these conversations. And so did 10 years of directing theater, which is a big focus on conversation and dialogue, because that's pretty much what you're mapping out on stage, and really having that skill set, and then looking at management training and development, which is what I ended up going into, and really being able to focus in on how do we do that better and more effectively, because it's the one conversation everybody in the workforce is having at some level. Top level leaders, middle management, and frontline managers. And if you're going to be good when you move from being an individual contributor to working with people, leading people, running people, growing your business from being your solo person, you're responsible for everything, to I've got a crew of people, I have to have a skill around communication, period. And accountability is part of that fundamental that we all have. We all assume we're going to be accountable. It's just part of the deal when we work together. And just that whole thing became my area of focus.
Is it fair to say, like, this is a learned skill? It's not something that just comes naturally to people. Like, although we might have some natural elements of it, it's not going to really get that good until we sit down and actually learn how to do this effectively.
Right. It's a bunch of skills, all communication skills. And what I would tell you is it's a practice. Some days we're really good at it. Some days we're not so good at it. But every conversation is an opportunity to apply yourself better.
So you chose this expertise, and I don't know if I've ever seen anybody that's labeled this before, but you're an accountability expert. Like, what does that mean?
Well, it's having a really good sense of clarity around what we mean when we talk about accountability. And that's a huge piece of the issue. So it's the expertise is that I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of managers and leaders on these exact conversations. How do I get better at managing the performance of people? And what does that entail? And as that mastery of mind grew, right, that's where you start to get a really deep understanding of what's it like in this environment, what happens to people at speed and under pressure versus when we're in a collaborative environment, or when we're all sitting fat and pretty and life isn't so hard, right? How does that change the dynamic and how we approach each other? So the expertise is everything from the communication skill set to understanding different styles of communication to understanding the environment and the context in which we have these conversations.
Now, in all this work, I imagine this is what got you to write this book, Own Up, which is all about this topic of accountability. What are the things that you're just kind of, I call it like beating my head against a brick wall, being like, everyone keeps doing it this way. So why did you write this book? Like, what were you trying to solve and figure out that you just saw a pattern in that everyone's doing wrong? What are we doing
wrong? I'm trying to take away the pain. Most people are uptight about accountability because we use accountability at the end of performance. We look at accountability as an outcome. And so people tend to have a punitive mindset that accountability is when we have to have the conversation, when things get screwed up and it's punitive and somebody's going to get punished. Heads are going to roll. And that makes us uncomfortable. And my whole mission is accountability is not punitive. Accountability is a practice around clarity. And people, you can't force accountability. People only take responsibility and ownership for what they're clear on. And the outcome of accountability is ownership and responsibility. And so it's a practice, it's not an outcome. And by looking at it differently, people are much more willing to engage in the conversation instead of being afraid of the conflict or putting it off or overpowering people because they just want to get the conversation out of the way.
Yeah, it's almost easier to tell people why they're stupid, lazy, and unmotivated and be like, I told them, I held them accountable versus have them tell me intrinsically what's actually happening. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Well, exactly. When we use the term hold people accountable, we sort of have this version of let me hold you down and get out of you what I need and what I want, as opposed to I'm going to hold space for you to own what you need to own so that you can get better and we can move forward.
This is good. So this goes into this conversation we had earlier, but is that kind of the overall outcome we're trying to get even in this podcast today is how do we get the person we're trying to hold accountable to own it versus us just own them?
Right. How do I create ownership and responsibility in the context of a conversation? And not only that, how do I create not just it's ownership for decisions and implications of that decision, right? So we always talk about outcomes. So what was the decision that you made? What was the outcome that you got that didn't work? I need you to own that. But then I also need you to own what you're going to do about that. And I also need you to own the effort to work on that so you get better over time.
Right.
So that we don't have to keep having the same conversation. So when we talk about ownership, it's ownership on all those things, not just I screwed up, man. I'm sorry.
Like an actual change in behavior long term so that you're not constantly hitting all the symptoms, you're getting to the root.
Right. The reason we're having the conversation, the reason we want to get clear, the reason I need you to own is so that you make better decisions and show up better over time consistently.
Got it. Okay. So with all this said, we've got people out there in the construction industry doing this in their own way. And I know, and we have our own flavor. So what is unique about the construction trades service business world versus, say, the white collar world? Like,
I think that in the construction industry, right, you're under a lot of pressure around schedule and quality, which seem to be at odds at times. And so there's a whole lot of issue there. And I think one of the things, if you're running a crew, you're running a business, is to be really clear on what the priority is, right? Because it feels contextual. It feels job by job on what's more important. If we're behind schedule, does suddenly that become the priority versus my team is all about quality? And so that seems to be the nature of part of what happens in the industry a lot. And that's where a lot of the pain and the strife is. Another one is sort of when you run a crew, are they contracted? Are they temporary? Are they right? And so the relationships don't feel permanent. And so we feel like, why do we want to invest any time getting anybody to be better at something? I just need them to get the job done now. And so you're making a lot of short-term decisions and actions versus long-term of what the irony is, we tend to hire the same people over and over again because we know if they're reliable or not. But if you're going to grow a reliable crew, how do you start to do that? By creating an environment where not only are they better having been on your crews, but they get better over time and they want to work with you because they understand the rules or the clarity is there. They understand how to work. And so I think those are big problems relative to the industry. And, you know, I'm just going to throw in there the whole, it's kind of male dominated and men don't tend to, it feels too soft it feels accountability conversations and growing and improving and all that kind of stuff feels too soft.
We don't want to show our feelings. We don't want to let you know. We're good.
We don't want to get into the emotional intelligence skills about what am I really hearing and, you know, what's going on there.
I'm just going to put my head down, Jen. I'm just going to do the work. Don't worry about me. Yeah. I'm fine.
Yeah. And I don't want to ask for help. And you know, when we talk about accountability as clarity, you know, guys don't like to ask for directions. So if I don't understand something, do I ask and does it feel safe for me to ask? Or am I just going to silently suffer and figure it out and hope I get it right?
So what you said basically we focus a lot on the project itself, and not the people. So we're trying to fix the project and the process and that, not the people. You've said that we are dudes and we don't like to talk about our feelings.
Yeah.
And you said something else, interesting, which is like we, especially for subcontractors, we have more short-term relationships sometimes with the people that we work with. So we don't see the point in investing in them. Mm-hmm. Got it. And so in all of this, I would love to, you have these steps in your book to kind of like, this is how you do good accountability work. And I was like, okay, cool. So I'm following these steps. To give everyone listening like a good practical example of this, let's talk in the context of, say, I'm a foreman who's blaming my crews for mistakes that are happening on site every single day. You're the owner of the business, and I've got basically no introspection on this. I'm just like, it's their fault, and you can't point the finger at me. So I would love to go through these steps, and as we do, let's just use that as the backdrop and see if we can get some just like learning out of this. Sound good?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So let's go. I think there's six steps here. Let's start with this first step. So this is what's going on. You're sitting in your office. You're like, this crew leader is just like, this crew's it's not going well. And you probably even want to fire me. I'm sorry.
Right. No, it's all good. So step number one, right? So we call these the six ownership steps, the SOS steps. Step number one is identify your issue. So accountability always starts with you. It's one thing to understand that you've got a foreman who's doing something different, right? Like not getting his crew to run however that is. So you have to come in and you have to think to yourself, what's my issue with this? What have I done or not done in order to set this guy up for success, right? And if I'm feeling like, look, I've given the thing, but if you're in a place of he should just know, that's where you have to start to question yourself. How much experience does this guy have? How long have I known him? What am I expecting? And really understanding that there are stated expectations, which tend to be the processes around work, how you're scheduling it out, all that kind of stuff. Then there's the unstated expectations, which tend to be a lot more of the problem, which are things like, does this guy have drive, willingness? Is he willing to learn? Is he transparent about what's going on? Can he manage others? Does he have good relationship skills? We all kind of assume that when somebody shows up in a foreman position, those are all the skill sets that come with. And so you got to really think through of what am I experiencing? What is the pattern of this? And they're not performing. What is the foreman doing that's allowing that crew to perform or not perform?
Right?
What is his level of ability to set work, hold people accountable, communicate clearly, be present with them in such a way that performance management gets better?
So you're saying like as an owner of this company, at some level, I have a percent of ownership myself of the person I've hired to go do their job. And if something's wrong with them, I've got to figure out like my contribution to this.
You own the relationship.
Right.
You own the relationship. And if the relationship isn't working because the person isn't performing, what am I doing to address that first?
This reminds me, we were talking about this before we started, but this reminds me of like my coach way back in the day when I was first starting my business. And I was like, everyone's stupid, lazy, and unmotivated. This is ridiculousness. And he said, Danny, but you hired these people and you told them that they are going to get paid every week from you. You decided to be with them. You trained them. You set the expectations. So what percent ownership do you have over this?
And I was like, all right. You chose this person.
Fine.
You chose this person. Yeah.
I'll take 30%.
Everybody has a percentage. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so once you understand what your issue is, right? So this guy doesn't have good people management skills. Maybe he doesn't communicate effectively well or consistently, right? If that's what I'm nailing down as my issue, the next thing step two is to analyze the context, because context drives behavior. And this is where you get into things like, am I clear on my priorities? Is it quality or is it schedule? Right? Can it be both? And what are the implications when it's both, right? Are my people cutting corners? Is the crew doing a poor job because we are pushing schedule? And the message to the foreman is just get it done. And is that what's happening? Right. And that's where your ownership of am I promoting a context where I give him nothing but bad options for decision making?
Right. You're just saying like, what's the environment I've put them into that's causing this? And is it right. more than just the person? There's something that I've set up and how I maybe bonus structure them, or how I've kind of like told them about this job and told them when it needs to be done by, that has now set something off in their brain that's causing this to happen.
Have I created a miscommunication and message around priority? So I've aligned this thing upright. But then when you really kind of break it down, you're also too looking for, has my foreman got a behavioral issue, a self-destructive behavior? Is he a micromanager? Does he hound people? Do they not like him? Are the relationships breaking down because he's got some kind of behavior that impedes whatever kind of relationship he has? Is it a skill set? Like, so we talked about, is he bad at communication and bad at relationship building? Not good at running the schedule, can't read the spreadsheet right, doesn't fill the information in. Like, is there some skill set relative to the processes and the systems that he doesn't have down, right? So am I dealing with a skill problem? Or is he behaviorally all right and he's got good skill sets and I've seen him do well? Do I have an attitude problem? Right? Is he pissed off about the nature of this project and the conditions I've stuck him in, or something going on where he's like, I can do all this, but I'm not, right? That's an attitude problem. Or if we got some kind of conflict going on about what he sees as important versus what I see as important. And so he's focused on other stuff and choosing to do that instead of running where my prioritization is. And so when I start to understand what that is, anything that's behavioral or skill-based is, how do I coach and train him so that he can get better, right? And is he willing to do that? And if it's living over in choices around, I've got an attitude about this, or I've got conflict about how you're running this job, and I think I need to run it my way versus how I think you ought to want it. Those are more about, are we a good fit to work together?
Right. Because alignment.
Right. That's really fundamental alignment. And so those approaches come in differently. And so I've got to make those determinations as I think through how I'm going to do that. That's the second step. The third step is, what are the impacts of what he's doing, right? If they're underperforming, the impacts is the team is losing morale because they know they're always behind schedule and I'm always crabby about it. And the customer's not happy. The customer's losing trust in us as a team and as a crew. Like, what are the impacts of what's going on with this guy? Because I need to compel the ownership by saying, look, the impacts are, I'm losing trust in you. The customer's losing trust and the team's losing trust.
So can we back up for a second? I want to think through this as we're doing this. So we're just like identifying the issue. You're like, what ownership should I have? What ownership do they have? What's actually like going on?
What's the issue? And understand, it's your issue until the foreman owns it.
Okay. Then I'm like analyzing, is this skill behavior or is it more of an attitude thing? So it's like, it takes you down one of two, because I've seen this before where it's like, this is all skill and they need development, but I'm like yelling at them to do better. And they're like, I don't even know how to do it better.
Right. You can tell because I have all the intention to want to do it and I just can't.
Right.
Versus I have all the skills and behaviors and I'm choosing not to.
So if you don't stop and analyze, you can actually create more of an issue because you've misdiagnosed.
Right. You're going to have a conversation about the wrong thing and then wonder why nothing changes.
Okay. So I've identified the issues. I'm analyzing. Now you're saying step three, I'm basically thinking through the impacts of their decisions. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. The impacts of the outcomes, right? So when I look at what my issue is, what are the impacts of this issue? What's happening and how am I going to create a compelling reason, right, to take ownership immediately, right? So when I talk to this guy and I'm going to say, look, I want to talk to you about your relationship building skills with your team, because your team is running amok because they're unclear about what they need to do, when they need to do it, and you're not following a process. Right. The impact of that is I'm losing faith in you, and they're got low morale because they feel like they can't get anything done.
Is it all about how it impacts me as, say, the owner, or is it all about how it impacts the job site, or is it shared impact that we're both struggling?
It could be all of those things.
Okay.
The more impact you're clear about, the more compelling it is for somebody to go, oh God, I got to get it together.
Right. Yeah. So you're kind of trying to get to the root impact of the whole thing. Cause it, mm-hmm. I do think also, and I've seen this not only in myself, but others we work with, it's like, sometimes you just go to like, this impacts me and this is how this impacts me. And then the person's like, I don't really care about you. So
yeah, because this is a short term relationship and yeah. Right. And that's where, you know, in longer term things and in peer to peer accountability, personal impacts are better. Because we need to work better together. And if we can't do this, how is this going to look for the rest of us, right? Making it personal at peer-to-peer is more impactful than when you're going up, laying down them.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got those first three steps. What's the next one?
The fourth step is rehearse, right? And this is the one everyone wants to skip because I can think about it in my head and I've got it all clear. And in my truck driving to the site, I'm having that conversation. And I'm so wicked smart. This is how it's going to go. And then I get in front of a person, right? I get eyeball to eyeball because I have these conversations on site in person, right? Not through text, not in email, because it's dialogue, not just information. And if I want to understand if this person's taken ownership, I got to do this live and in person, which means I'm going to have eyeballs.
Right.
And that always changes a dynamic because once we get a person in front of us, our heart rhythms, we can pick up on the nervousness, the impact. When you say to somebody, look, we need to have a conversation. I've got some issues I want to talk to you about. People always show up with like, oh, what did I do? And that tenseness happens. Right. And so if you don't take the time to say, this is how I'm going to start the conversation. Just practice the first couple sentences out loud. The benefit of that is when I get in front of you, I've got the language at my fingertips. I know what it is I need to say so that I can be clear. And in practicing it out loud, I can also start to understand, how's that going to sound? Will that make them defensive? Will that shut them down? Oh, that's not what I really meant to say, right? How will that be interpreted? And so it gives us an opportunity to anticipate a response as well as get better languaging before we ever open our mouth.
Right. I imagine basically what you're saying is emotion kicks in, both on their side and even sometimes on our side. And it might be anger. It could be fear. It could be whatever it is. But when emotion kicks in, you kind of lose the script and you just kind of go off the cuff and suddenly you've lost potentially the whole plot.
Because the number one reaction is defensiveness. And defensiveness is all about fight and protect. That's where finger pointing and blaming and all that kind of stuff shows up because nobody wants to feel incompetent. Nobody wants to feel stupid. And when you're good at setting the table, you mitigate the defensive reaction because you're going to say, I want to give you some feedback about what I'm experiencing because I think you can do better. Here's what I'm seeing.
Is it fair to say you kind of take this like approach of I'm not your enemy, but I'm more your coach and I'm here to kind of work with you on this versus like be against you on this?
Yeah, you should always come in. So the first thing I will teach people is do not come in with judgment. Do not come in to rescue people and do not come in with answers. Right. And judgment is you're screwing up. You're sucking at this thing. Right. You're using language that makes people feel competent and stupid. If you're coming in with rescuing, you're one of those people who doesn't like conflict and you're going to say things like, I know you've been super busy and people have been sick on the crew and this has really been a struggle. And in doing that, I give you all the excuses you need, right? And rescuing also is, here's what we can do. And it becomes a we thing, right? As opposed to a you thing, right? And if I need you to own it, it's a you thing and a you and me conversation, not a we conversation. So I always tell people, please don't we on your accountability. And if I'm coming in with answers, that's where I'm leading you to what I need you to do and say,
right?
Which takes away their ability to think critically about what they're doing and get better over time and own things, own solutions.
Yeah, this is so. If it's a you, if I'm like you did this, you did that, I'm kind of like domineering around onto them. The mm-hmm. we thing, you know what's interesting, Jen? So I do the we thing all the time. It's just listening to you right now, I'm like, I'm always about the we. I'm always in the trenches with my team and I'm always
how
like,
how do we do this together? How can we help you? How
good.
Do we,
yeah.
Well, because it makes us part of the solution.
Yeah.
And when you really want ownership, it's not what can we do together? It's what do you think you need to do differently? Mm-hmm. What would help you?
It's so interesting the words you're using. Like those words change the whole context of the conversation. I versus we versus you versus, yeah, it's.
Mm-hmm. here's what I'm experiencing, my issue. Here's what I'm seeing. Here's what concerns me. Here's what I see as the impacts. Tell me how you see it.
Right.
And in inviting that piece, I am opening the conversation to listen for a response. And in that response, I'm listening for ownership.
So we've drifted into step five already, haven't we? Engage in the conversation.
Yes.
Let's set that as context. So we've rehearsed, which is what you're talking about, is thinking through the language, because you just mentioned like even the words I versus you versus we matter. So like, let's make sure we do this right.
Right.
Now let's get into the conversation. How did these conversations go? We started it already, but like walk me through this a little bit.
Right. So you'd say, hey, you know, Jerry, I want to talk to you about how you're managing your crew. I've got some concerns about how they're performing, and I think that might be related to how you're actually communicating with them.
Right.
And so I'm going to set the context so he knows what I'm going to talk about. Then I'm going to describe what I'm experiencing, right? Based on what I'm seeing is they're not really clear on what the priorities are. They're standing, they're tripping over each other, and the quality of the work isn't where it needs to be. And maybe I need to be more specific about communication, your daily team setups, right? So I want to be as concise and clear about what my issue is. So if it's your daily stand-up meetings are more about, are too brief and too general. You're not being explicit with your team about what exactly the end of the day needs to look like. And then I'd say, talk to me about how you see it, Jerry.
Right. Yeah. So you're setting it up. You're saying here's where the issue is. Here's where the impact is. Mm-hmm. And then you're basically saying, you tell me your side of this. And actually what's interesting, you're giving specific examples, mm-hmm. which I think sometimes we can be general around. It's generally just not, it's causing some productivity issues. It's like, no, like on Tuesday, when this happened, this was the impact it had. Is that what you're saying? Like be very specific.
I want to be as clear as I can be in what the issue is. And if I've got a specific example, use it. But you don't need to build a case. You don't need to say on Tuesday it was this, on Wednesday it was this, last week it was this. It's like, I see a pattern. Here's an example of what it was yesterday.
It's used more for learning so that we can be on the same page than it is for like making the point really poignant. Mm-hmm. Sticking the finger in the... Yeah, their eyeball. Yeah.
Yeah. How to really get clear on what your issue is, right? And that's why I say that whole thought process is really important. But that's, yeah, then I'm going to bring it in. So when you're in the conversation, right, how you lay the table in a way that says, I've got some information to share, I'm concerned about, I want to know where you are on it.
Okay.
And in asking that, I open the conversation because in that response, when they say, oh, I didn't realize, and I try really hard, and that's interesting. Am I hearing ownership in what they're saying? Are they taking responsibility? And in that responsibility, saying, gosh, have you got any ideas on how I could do this better? I mean, you're looking for that kind of conversation versus somebody who's like, what do you mean? I don't understand. It seems fine to me.
Right. So you're looking right. for like more introspection, I would call it. Is that fair to say?
I'm going to start to think critically about how am I doing this? Well, what am I really doing? And I would be like, walk me through what you do in the morning. How could you do that better? Oh, I see what you mean. Right. So in that moment of ownership, when you get to solution, you're already there on, you can co-create that solution. You can just say, what do you think would help you? Would you come in and run the morning meeting so I can watch you do it? Oh, that would help me. Okay, great. I'll do that twice this week and see if you can pick that up on how I'm looking for you to communicate, right? Let me show you what I'm looking for. Like what would help them?
Okay. Now you're touching on step six. Tell us step six. So we've done all this. We've had this conversation. They've started to own it a little bit. Yep. They've started to own it. What happens next?
Then, and in the solution building, and this is where you don't talk about what you need. Which is a lot of time when we give people feedback and we're looking for ownership, we say, here's what you suck at and here's what I need. And that's what they experience. And in the way I do it, it's like, here's what I'm experiencing. Tell me how you see it. Do they own it? Once they own it, the solution is what would help you?
Right.
What do you think you need to do different and how can I support that?
Right. What if they don't own it? What if they're just like, no, I'm not following you. I'm not tracking with you here.
You can say, let me be really specific and clear. And you can restate it another way to see if you get ownership. And they can just say, I don't disagree. And then you can say, okay, if you're not going to own it. And here's the thing, what you want to know is, so you clarify non-ownership. So if they're going to say, no, I disagree, I don't think that's the thing. So I'm hearing what you're saying, but what I'm hearing is you don't want to take responsibility for. And I'm going to clarify what I'm hearing. What we tend to do is want to problem solve. Mm-hmm. And this is where it can always fall apart. When people go into non-ownership, or what we call denial, is we want to talk about all the reasons they don't want to own it. I disagree because so-and-so, this, that, the other, right? And they could be giving excuses about where their team are difficult and this guy doesn't really know. And it's not my fault that he doesn't have the skill level or whatever it is. And you can say, I hear all the things that you're telling me, Jerry, but what I don't hear is that you're willing to take responsibility for managing and improving your team.
So you come out and just say it. You say, hey, man, like, we're trying to find some common ground here and you're not working with me. Or is that
no.
too? No.
No, okay. Because I'm not looking for common ground.
Okay.
I'm looking for ownership and responsibility. Okay. I hear all the things you're telling me, but what I don't hear is that you're willing to take responsibility for effectively managing your team. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Right.
And that always pulls people up short, because that's really what you're hearing. They're going to tell you all the reasons. This guy doesn't have this. I'm dealing with this. This is a problem. This is going on. All these reasons, which is, I'm a victim of all these things.
Okay.
And you're never a victim when it comes to accountability, because how are you choosing to deal with all of that, Jerry?
Right.
You're making decisions about how you're handling that. And what I'm telling you is some of those decisions aren't working.
Mm-hmm. And you're just letting them start to realize, like, externalizing constantly isn't going to solve your issue or even ours. Like, we're just creating more problems.
The expectation is you're effectively handling all the things that come at you.
Yeah.
Where do you need help? What would help you do that better?
That's really interesting. So you're kind of like, look, these are the issues you're in charge of. I don't hate you for this. I just want to know, like, how do we do better together even? Like, how do I even help you do a better job of this?
Yeah. If we can't talk about it, I don't give you an opportunity to do better.
Right.
I'm having this because I care about you. I care about the issue. How does changing and improving happen?
I do think people do have a natural tendency to defend and explain, like, on both sides of this. Like, this is why this conversation, I think, is so important, because I think mm-hmm. they will naturally defend and explain, and you will probably, even as the owner, naturally defend and explain. And until you can get past that and start to work together on, like, the actual issue and, like, what's causing this issue, nothing really, you just start arguing more.
Right. And the arguing comes when people go emotional.
Right.
Right. When our lizard brain hijacks us. And we go defensive, which means I feel like I need to defend because I feel like I'm being attacked, right? That's when those things come. And when I come at you and I tell you all these things and you go defensive, now you're in an emotional state and you feel like you're unsafe. That's when it becomes a fight. That's when we lose access to the prefrontal cortex, which is where all of our problem-solving, insight, wisdom happens. When we are hijacked in the back of our brain, all of our brain function gets enslaved to the amygdala, which means all of my thinking is about fighting and defending instead of how do I problem solve this? And this is a place of trust and this is a place of distrust. And so language impacts that neurochemistry.
This is why I think this is a learned skill, because I think that naturally we will go into passive or aggressive mode, or like Canadians do, passive aggressive mode. And and I think that we just react to our fear responses.
We're wired, yeah. Right? Our brains are wired to protect us, period. And it's defensive reasoning, and people go there very, very easily. And what you need to do as a business owner is recognize it when it happens.
Right.
Understand somebody's defensive.
And also recognize it in yourself, I think.
100%.
Yeah, I think it's equal. I think it's both.
The best way to get out of it, to when somebody goes defensive, is call it out.
Yeah.
Hey, stop the conversation. My intention wasn't to make you defensive. Right. Go back to intention. My intention is to understand how to help you get better at this.
Cool. Yeah. And that will disarm. That sounds very disarming, actually. It sounds very like, okay, right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. We've done this now. We've circled back maybe a little bit, and we've kind of like, hey, my intention was to actually like work on this properly, not with you, not to create more issues.
Right.
They start to own this. So they own the solution is kind of what you're saying needs to happen at some level.
Mm-hmm.
What does this look like? How do we kind of like wrap this up so we know we've made some impact?
So you summarize at the end. So based on the conversation, here's what we're going to do going forward. Here's what you're going to try. Here's what you're going to do. And then as the person giving the feedback of driving the ownership, what are you doing to follow up? Let's talk about, let's talk about, let's see how this goes next week, right? Let's get together next Friday and let's see if this is, if this helps you. Because what you want to make sure is you don't just tell somebody and let them ride. Your job, and when you own a business is, and you're running people, I'm going to give you feedback. I need you to improve. I'm going to hold you accountable. And then I want to make sure whatever you agreed to do is happening.
Hey, following right? up
and
on
those
what
conversations
you talked
about. Can be shorter. Follow up is where things can fall over, because all of a sudden, you know, like, I made all this effort, no one cares.
Right.
And in management, no news is good news is not a thing. Is when silence is not good practice. I should be giving constructive feedback so people get better, but I should also be giving reinforcing feedback, because that's where you create momentum in your teams.
So I might want to actually like write this down for myself a week out to come back and check in, and because I'm likely going to forget or not forget, but just like not make it a priority a week from now. I'll feel like, ah, problem solved. We had the chat. Well, all good. But I actually have to come back to this.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So some of this I think is so good. And actually there's so many like minutia in your language. I would love, if you're cool, this just to role play this. So just the conversation piece to getting to some level of a resolution. So step four, five, step six, I will be the foreman that keeps blaming my crews for mistakes. And you can be the owner of the business who is basically trying to have this conversation with me. And I'm just going to do me. I'm just going to see what happens here. So
all right.
Hold me accountable, Jen.
There we go. Here we go. Danny, thanks for coming in. I'm taking a minute off the job to have a conversation with me. I wanted to give you some feedback about how you're managing your team, because I think you've got some areas for improvement that would really help the crew, help you, and help the job.
Yeah, I agree. These guys, they just like, they suck. Like, they're not doing good. And I've told them over and over and over again. They don't listen to me. Like, it's just, it's impossible.
So I'm glad that you're aware of that. What I'm experiencing is that they don't listen to you, and that you're having a hard time communicating with them. And the impact of that, Danny, is when they're not listening and the communication isn't working, right? This is the kind of craftsmanship we get and quality work we get and schedule challenges that we get. And so in thinking about how you're communicating with them, what might help you get better at that, do you think?
Me? I think we need a new crew. Like, I think we need to like let these guys go.
I hear what you're saying, but your role as foreman in the crew is to manage the crew that you've got. And so I know that's a challenge. And so let's talk about the challenge of managing the crew, because that is what your role is.
It is fair. Yeah, no, I agree. But I don't actually know what to do to manage them any better. I feel like I tell them every day that they need to show up on time. I tell them every day that, you know, the quality issues that are, I point out everything that's going on the site, and I don't feel like they care.
And have you had conversations with them about that? Before I go into problem solving with you, really think about, when you think about your ability to communicate with them, where do you think you're effective and where do you think you need to work?
Yeah, I guess I don't think much about my communication with them. I just think as long as they've heard it, like they should do what they're told, right?
Right. And so one of the myths about communication is that the message is with the person who gives the information. And the message really is with the person you're talking to. And so if it's not landing on them, what might be some ways for you to get better at having the kind of impact you need?
Well, I've got one guy on the site. I mean, we had a really, really good chat over lunch last week, and I've seen some improvement with him. And I think I got to know him a little better. I mean, I got to understand, you know, what motivates him, what doesn't. And we've had some better chats, actually. So maybe to get to know my team a little better.
Yeah. Would that be something you'd be willing to try? Maybe establish a better relationship so you can get an understanding of where they need more attention, where, how they tick, so that you can communicate with them, meet them where they are.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I'd be willing to try almost anything. I wasn't sure what the right move was. So for me, it's more just like, I grew up in a world where I tell people what to do and they do their job. And this is not how I'm naturally wired to do it this way.
Yeah. Well, this might be an area of improvement for you in getting a little bit more versatile with your own communication, maybe getting a little bit stronger about how you talk to each person. Because each person is, you got to meet them where they are. You got to see their skill level where it is. And as a leader in the organization, it's important for me that you can build connection with them. Is that something you'd be willing to try?
I'll try anything at this point. I'm desperate. So
All right. Well, maybe I can look for some material or something I can give you so you can have some kind of a reference on what this might look like for you. But then how about we meet again at the end of the week? Try this on a daily basis, like start meeting with your guys one to one and get a sense of that. Right. And then let's see what you're learning at the end of the week and if we can build on this strategy. Does that sound agreeable?
Fair enough. Yep, we can do that.
All right, cool.
It's good. So yeah, I wasn't just leaning into this. I think at some level there will be some back and forth trying to navigate people's ownership of the issue. And only when they own it are you actually able to have them problem solve it for themselves. And so don't move too fast. I noticed a bit, like if you're having this chat, you need to find that ownership with them. And then once they're like, they own it a bit, then you can say, okay, now what can you do about it? Versus here's what you can do about it and telling them it.
And part of what you see and what I do, I mean, obviously I have more tools at this. And so what I want to say to people who feel like, well, that's easy for her to do because she knows all these things.
Sure.
Is what I have to do in that moment is be really clear that what I'm expecting of you isn't negotiable.
Right.
Right. So when you say, well, I've always done it this way and I'm doing it and these guys really suck is I understand all that, but I'm very clear that this is what I want my leadership to be able to do.
Right. You're holding the line.
And that's the thing I leaned into. And so that's when I say, when you got to own it first, your ability to be really clear about what you're expecting and what you want and that the expectation isn't negotiable just because they push back on you. Doesn't mean you have to figure out a different way to deal with this person or change this person's job description to suit them, right? This isn't about what's comfortable. This is about what's expected.
And I think this is huge too, because I think there is actually a big challenge, not in just speaking to people too harshly, but I think there are also, people are afraid of losing people. It's so hard to recruit people. We bend too quickly to people's needs and demands because we don't want to lose them, right?
Right. And the irony isn't, and it's counterintuitive, is when you're really clear about how it needs to work, people can choose to stick around or not. They always have that choice. But when they have clarity and they know you're going to hold the line and you're going to hold a standard, it's a much more satisfying place to work.
Yeah. People want strong
Whereas
leadership.
Whereas if things are moving around job to job and it's different job to job and they're never clear, that's unsatisfying because I don't know how to make a good decision in that environment.
Amazing. Yeah. It's not about being aggressive. It's not about being passive. It's about being clear.
Clear.
Is that right?
Clear
is kind. You told me that in our prep call. That's good.
That's Brené Brown. Yeah. Clear is kind. Unclear is unkind.
Right.
Yeah.
Now this got me thinking after our prep call, and I wrote this question down afterwards, but I was realizing that, like, I think if you do this properly, this impacts people's critical thinking quite a bit. And I don't know if you have a comment on this, but like, I feel like a lot of us struggle with a big team that does not think critically, and we just think they don't have the ability to do it. I don't know if that's always true, though. I think we actually bring out an environment where people don't choose to think critically.
Right. And context drives behavior. If I keep telling you, you suck and here's what you need to do, you're just going to say, tell me what you want, because I'm going to give you malicious compliance. But when you say to me, what would help you? I'm asking you to think through. I'm asking you to self-reflect. And in asking you those questions, I learn about you. So in this whole scenario where this, you know, I don't know my guys very enough. Well, if I start asking them what would help you, I start to learn how they think, how they problem solve, and how they self-reflect, which tells me where I need to help them, right? And critical thinking, you as managers, if you're running crews and you're running teams and you're running a business, the people in your management positions, their responsibility is to create good problem solvers. And you can't solve problems if you can't think.
Totally. And I've seen this years ago. I used to hire franchisees to run area and like turf, like postal codes, zip codes. And they, over time, had to learn how to be critical thinkers for themselves to run their own small businesses. But in the off season, when we weren't running these painting things, they were helping me. They were actually working for me to help recruit new franchisees. And I watched critical thinking turn off. And I was like, what the heck is this? And it was that they thought that they went from running their own business to being an employee under me. And they just like, and it, maybe it was the way I communicated with them. Obviously, there's a piece that I always had to play in this, as you just told me. But but it was like so fascinating for me because I was like, people have more critical thinking than I think we give people credit for. But we just turn it off in them because as a boss, we mismanage them and the way that we bring ownership towards what their job actually is day to day.
right? Under the mythology that it's just faster if I do it myself and just tell you what I need, right?
Yeah.
Speed and pressure bring out that behavior in leaders. And it's a myth, right? I got to teach you to fish because we'll have fewer conversations if you're a better thinker.
It's that whole like short-term gain, long-term pain kind of thing, and vice versa. It's like, right. I'm too busy to deal with this. And then so for the next 10 years, I'm going to be dealing with this versus let me deal with this now properly for the next month or two. And then I'll create a good critical thinking human that can go work and produce all year long and be happy. But it takes time up front.
Yeah. But the what you want, there's a cost to let me just do this.
Yeah.
The cost is I am now doing your job and I'm paying you at the same time.
And I think owners too is like, I felt this too, where you just have you're reluctant to let go of control. You just want to control everything. And that creates, again, a lack of critical thinking on the team.
That's right.
I want to get into like a couple more topics here before we end. But like, so when I was prepping for this, I was like, okay, accountability. And I had this conceptual understanding of it. Now, this is my own bias here because we run Breakthrough Academy and we are all about like employment agreements and organizational structure and goal setting on a weekly rhythm. And that to me, I'm like, I'm holding accountability to the team on their goals that we're all trying to shoot for. Now, when we started chatting, I realized like this is a lot more of like a soft skill, the philosophical side of like how the human brain works. Mm-hmm. Where does business structures like what I just described, like goal setting and review and stuff, where does that fit in with this? And where can it go wrong if all it is just structure in business systems?
Well, right. And that's where like it circles back to what we talked about at the beginning in terms of context. Context drives behavior. And your processes and your systems create context. Right. And what is it about your processes and systems that deliver the behavior that you get that creates the underperformance? Right. Is it too complex? Is it too structured? Does it limit autonomy such that I don't get to make decisions? Does it? Right. And so what you want to do is what's the happy marriage between the two of those? And what's the level of ownership over that process and system for that person? Right. And that comes to decision making authority and how much authority somebody actually really has. The less authority, the more you tell, the more constrained, the more victim-y people tend to be versus more autonomy and decision-making, the more internally motivated I am to do better, to think more, and to know what a good decision looks like.
And I think you used the word hollow when we did our prep. And I liked that word. You were like, these meetings, these goal-setting meetings every week that are all about numbers and KPIs and achieving, right. You're like, if it's only that, Danny, it's going to get hollow. And I was like, I felt that before, actually, where we start to have these meetings because we just have them in the calendar and I'm supposed to hold you accountable to a number. And we know that you didn't hit for the seventh time in a row. And and it's just it loses its meaning. And I feel
there's no accountability for status.
Yeah.
And what those meetings are is they become this status meeting. And I just go, yeah, we're going to be behind. We're going to do this. Right. And I'll tell you what you need to hear, as opposed to using those opportunities, not just as status, but to really ask more deep questions where the meeting becomes valuable, where the question is, if you're running up against something, what's it like? What is the preventive? Who knows what they're going to have impacts on other parts of the project, right? What's your problem solving related to that? What's your plan around that? What are you intending to do and how are you handling that? And then when you're with the other people in the room, is that going to work for everybody, right? So that you're actually asking people to solve problems and take ownership of around the decisions and actions, as opposed to, did we hit the thing? Did we hit the thing? Why did we not hit the thing? Oh, we'll hit it next week. And we don't really go into what the decisions are that are driving what that status is.
Yeah, it's like I can set up all the structure I want, but it's what's in the building and that matters. What's in the conversation that ends up mattering. And that'll decipher between a really good leader and a really shitty leader. Even if you've got grid structure, if you don't have good conversations within that structure, you're not going to yield the results you hope.
Right. We're going to miss a date on this. Okay, how is that going to impact everybody else on the team?
Right.
Have you communicated that? Right. To ask all the deeper level responsibility questions.
To empower your people, to give them a chance to actually own their part of it so that you're not micromanaging all elements of an organization. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. People like meaningful work. They like to be included. They like to make decisions. They like to be valuable.
It's good. I want to go into one or two more things here. So let's say we start to introduce this on our team and we start to have these more critical conversations and we start to go deep with people. What are like, just what's the pushback I'm going to see? What are some expectations? What can I expect to happen, both good and bad? Because this is going to be change.
Both good and bad. Yeah. Right? Because change is change. And accountability always, so change is a J curve. And when you start getting really good at holding people accountable and you get foremen and folks who can really start to have a good conversation, the people who've been hiding will show up. And so it can feel like, for some who have been really good at dodging accountability forever, like exposure. And so you might lose a couple people. You might get a couple people who are like, oh no. But then you might also get some people who are like, oh, thank God this is happening. This feels so much better. And so your ability to really deal with and anticipate, right, that the shift is going to, it might change performance for a hot minute before it gets much better, because those people may pause in the moment of change and go, I'm not doing this because I'm not comfortable, and I've never been comfortable about this.
You're going to weed the garden a little bit.
You're going to weed the garden, and that's exactly what you want to do.
Got it. So be prepared for that, but to not do that means you just have a big weedy garden, which is no fun either. So,
well, that's not real accountability, is it? Because there's no consequence.
Can I just avoid all this? Can we just not do any of this? All right. I have a bunch of other questions. I think for time, I'm going to skip to this last one here. So we have probably a lot of people listening right now that have made it. I always think about the people that have made it to this point of the podcast are the people that are actually probably dealing with a lot of this right now, and they need to go do something. Is there any just like advice you have for those who are listening right now?
The advice is try it, right? It's one thing to intellectualize this, but it's another thing to actually think about, how do I actually jump off the cliff? You will be surprised at how impacting it can be in just a couple conversations. And I think that's always this is when we talk about it, and the expertise in giving you all this detail can make it feel like, this is bigger than Ben-Hur. This is so much effort. It's really, really not. Going through the first four steps of the solution of this six ownership steps, those first four, 10 minutes of your life, figure that out. Fourth step, maybe take a couple more minutes to write it down, think it through, maybe 15 minutes there. But literally, when you start to do this, is the more you practice, the better you get, the more benefit your business has. And so it's, quit waiting to have these conversations. It's the best thing you'll ever do for your business. It's the best thing you'll ever do to lead your folks.
Learning comes from reps, not from overthinking it, not from overanalyzing.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. Right. And your discomfort is your learning. And if you are still in a place of comfort, you're not pushing yourself.
So there you go. A big challenge from Jen. And I agree. If you're listening right now, and I know all of you do, I have some probably, that we need to have some critical conversations with a few people. What are you going to do about it this week?
Right.
Who's the one person, right? Just one. Let's just like pick one, think through this, go through the steps, and have one just like good. What is it we call it? Like an accountability conversation? What's the term for this?
Yeah.
Hold some accountability.
Yeah. Feedback. It's just feedback, really, but it's accountability focused. Like I'm giving you feedback because I need ownership and change.
Now, anyone who might go do that might want to read through your book maybe, or just like check out the steps again, so they're not just hearing them verbally. How do they do this? Yeah. How do they get in touch with you?
So you can go to accountabilityatwork.com. You can find all the own up information on there. You can download a chapter of my book. The book has, you walk through all the steps. I give you all the tips and tricks. I give you sample conversations in that book. And then I gave you a QR code, Danny, if you want to share that with your folks, they can download worksheets that I'll walk you through. Here's how you do it. Set yourself up. And so, the shortcut is get the downloads and listen to the book if you want the reinforcement.
Great. Yeah, we'll put that in the description, whether it's QR code or a link for the QR. We'll get that in there for everyone. So,
yeah.
Jen, that was great. This is good. This is like the biggest blind spot I think so many of us have. And it's like so simple to understand the concept of, but we just don't do it. Because again, I think emotion get in the way, and we just, again, we don't want to make time for this. We want to make time to move and go. Whereas I think we bulldoze and cause more issues long-term if we do that. So
Right. And emotion is part of communication. People get frustrated. People get angry. Understand. Don't be afraid to talk about it. I see you're angry.
Welcome to being a human being. Yeah.
Welcome to being human.
Welcome to managing other humans. This is
exactly.
This is the world we are
that's
in.
That's a whole other podcast.
All right. Okay, Jen. All right. Awesome hanging with you. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Okay. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.